Hi, this is Robin Bell, Manager of Community Outreach at the State College of Florida, and this is the Suncoast Culture Club podcast. Welcome to the club. The Suncoast Culture Club podcast is your weekly dose of what's happening in the performing and visual arts on Florida's Suncoast, including interviews, reviews, discussions, behind-the-scenes tidbits, and insider trading. Join State College of Florida arts faculty as they bring you all of the arts happenings on the Suncoast, from music to dance to art to theater. Come along and join the club. I am pleased to welcome to the podcast today a fellow conductor who has over 40 years of experience, which we will hear all about, and who in 2017 founded the Sarasota Chamber Orchestra, one of the few professional chamber orchestras in the state of Florida. So, Robert Vodnoy, welcome to the club.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here, Robert.
Now, Robert, my dad's name is Robert, but he goes by Bob. Is that the same for you?
Yes.
Bobby?
Only when I was little.
Yes, same for him. He hates to be called that now. So you've been at this conducting thing for 40 years. But as I tell people in America, you can't like major in conducting as an undergraduate student. So you had to start some other place as a musician. Tell us about the young lad, Bobby, and how you got into this whole stick waving business, like from the start.
Sure. So actually, 2024, so only 2 years from now, will actually be my 50th season. I made my professional debut in 1975. It was an audition concert with the Southwest Michigan Symphony Orchestra.
Were you a musician of any point at that? Were you a piano player, a violinist? How did you start?
I went to the Interlochen Arts Academy in high school, which was a high school arts boarding school. It's where the National Music Camp is near Traverse City, Michigan.
Yes, I know of it well. So yeah. What did you play?
I was a violinist.
And so you started violin, though, like elementary school, middle school?
Like I was about six.
And did your parents say, Bobby, you're going to play violin? Or did you like, I want to learn to play the violin?
I started on piano.
Okay.
My mother was a piano teacher.
There you go.
And I started with my mom. And since I actually don't have a childhood memory of this, but what I believe the story is that my grandmother had turned their largest house into a house and a boarding rooms upstairs. And she had a boarder who was a violinist in the South Bend Symphony, and she offered him low rent if he would give her grandson violin lessons.
That being you.
That being me. So I actually can remember climbing up the outside stairs to the second story of this scary old house with my little violin, maybe 5 or 6 years old.
And so we're talking about Indiana, and then you mentioned Interlochen, Michigan. Mm. So you're a good Midwesterner.
Correct. Actually, I was born in South Bend.
Okay.
And went to school first at Interlochen. And then I went to the North Carolina School of the Arts, which I was a student there the year it opened. So I was there when Vittorio Giannini was there.
So you are an inaugural student.
I am an inaugural student. Mm-hmm. And so even at Interlochen, when I was still in high school, I was already conducting.
Okay. But you were primarily a violinist first.
You know, I never wanted to be anything but a conductor.
Really?
Yeah, I just always wanted to be a conductor.
Do you remember your first experience where you saw someone conducting? You go, that's what I want to do.
I sure do. Probably about my third violin teacher was Edwin Hames. Edwin Hames was a concert violinist from Australia. He came on tour, as we're talking in the 20s, and became a violin teacher there, married the boss's daughter. Okay. And eventually inherited the South Bend Symphony as its conductor. And he conducted it for many, many years. So I remember going to lessons with my teacher, Edwin Hames, and to go see him conduct. And we're talking about concerts with Nathan Milstein and, I mean, Van Cliver and some really great people.
Yeah.
That's in the 50s. And so I guess it just seemed natural to me. He was a violinist and he was a conductor. And he was short, and I'm short.
Okay. You're not so short.
He was shorter than me. He was so small for your violin people who are listening, that he played a 7/8 Gruffrüller violin.
Wow. He couldn't play a full-size violin.
He was too little.
Okay, so you're in North Carolina at the School of the Arts. And then where'd you go next?
Then I went to the University of Hartford, Hart College of Music. And I'm still not a conducting major. By the time I finished at Hart, I finished a bachelor's and master's in composition.
Okay, so you're a composer.
Well, I'm someone who writes music.
So I say I'm a decomposer.
But when I went to the North Carolina School of the Arts, we had a summer program in Italy at the L'Accademia Chigiana. So I went 2 summers and I studied with a fabulous conductor named Piero Bellucci.
And this would have been, you would have been like high school age, 17, 18?
No, by the time I got to Italy, I would have been a freshman in college.
Okay, freshman in college. Right. Got it.
And so the first year I was in Italy studying with Piero, I conducted the Mozart 29. And the next year I conducted the Brahms Second Symphony. And it was a fantastic orchestra. I mean, they had kids from Juilliard. And we could play anything.
That makes your job as a conductor very easy.
Makes it actually very scary. Yeah. When your concertmaster is somebody named Romuald Tecco, who eventually becomes the concertmaster of the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra.
You better know your stuff up there.
You get on the podium and you're like, oh, these people know so much more than I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from the School of the Arts, I went to Hart College, where I also took conducting lessons. And Paranoff was leading a reading session. And it was only 2 of us in the conducting class. My friend and I, we went to him and said, listen, you get to conduct all the time and we never get the orchestra. So he said, well, there's 2 pieces scheduled. One of them is Brahms' 4th. And my friend was faster than me.
I'll do it.
He said, I already know Brahms' 4th. So he said, okay, you got it. And he looked at me and said, I know this is difficult, but the other piece is Mahler 1st. He said, you probably don't know Mahler 1st. I said, oh, on the contrary, I know Mahler 1st very well. I played it under Thor Johnson at Interlaken. I played it in Italy under Piero Bellucci. I was always the offstage conductor for the trumpets.
Well, that's perfect for you.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
And he scoffed. And he said, okay, you can start, but when it falls apart, I'll take over. It never fell apart.
Good for you.
It never fell apart. Although at the end, he finally pushed me off the podium because he wanted to conduct the big chorale at the end.
Conductor ego. I will do the one with the chorale.
So he called me into his office and he said, there's restarting the Monte School in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And I have
the Pierre Monteau School.
Monteau had died a few years before that. They're reopening it. And I have a benefactor here in Hartford who will pay a full scholarship to a student from Hart. I'm giving it to you.
Nice.
You can go for as long as you want. So I went to the Monteau School for 4 years. And that brings us up to 1972. And in 1972, I went to Indiana University. When I was there, there were 5 orchestras.
Yeah.
Wow. As conductors, we had our own orchestra.
But that kind of brings you full circle back to Indiana, right?
Right. So I am a born-again Hoosier.
Yeah.
So I was at IU for 3 years. Almost all the doctorate finished. And then I started auditioning, and I got hired in 1975.
And that was your first paid conducting gig?
Correct.
Where was that?
That was Southwest Michigan Symphony in St. Joe in Benton Harbor, Michigan. And then for the next 20 years, I also conducted the Northwest Indiana Symphony. And then in 2005, I retired from that orchestra in Michigan and became the orchestra director at Northern State University in Aberdeen, South Dakota, where I stayed for 13 years and retired as a tenured folk professor. And while I was in South Dakota, I had another orchestra, a community orchestra out there. And in 2000, I started a summer festival orchestra in Indiana called the Whiting Park Festival Orchestra, which I still have.
Nice. So you spend your summers there doing that festival orchestra.
Correct. I have the perfect life. I have a winter season in Florida and a summer season in Indiana.
Nice. And so when did you locate to Venice?
My wife retired a little ahead of me. So
also a musician?
No.
No.
My wife is a retired French and Spanish teacher. So she retired. And so she was down here for part of the season in my last year at Northern. So I came every vacation. I came to Florida and then I retired. And so we were renters for a year in Venice and we found a condo in 2019. And so
living the good life.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It's wonderful.
And a beautiful day here today. I mean, just, yes. It's November 1st when we're recording this, and it is just gorgeous outside.
It is. And when you think about the fact that when I was in South Dakota, when I woke up at, let's say, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning because I wanted to get ready for the lectures that were coming for the day, the temperature would be maybe minus 25.
No, thank you. You can keep that.
Yeah.
You've earned it, Bob.
Thank you.
You have earned it. So then here comes along 2017, and here comes the founding of the Chamber Orchestra of Sarasota.
Yeah.
Tell me how that came into your head and how it was given birth.
So in 2016, my wife was already down here, just for a few months. So I came down, and when I was here, my sister is Lori Vaudnoy-Wright. I know you know Lori.
I do know Lori.
And Lori said, you know, you should found a chamber orchestra here.
So it was her idea.
Absolutely. And my first reaction, and as a conductor, you will know that my first gut reaction is, do you have any idea how much work that is? Yeah. And I, at that time,
Lori, just be quiet.
And you have to, I mean, I was a full-time professor in South Dakota, and I had an orchestra in Indiana. So I said, why do you think I need three orchestras?
Yeah.
And she said, you're asking the wrong question. And I said, what's the right question? She said, the right question is, what are you going to do when you retire?
She's right about that.
Yeah. And I thought, well, of course, we conductors don't actually retire anyway.
No. So, well, musicians in general.
I mean, we just don't. You just find a way to keep doing it.
Yeah.
So I said, that's a good point. And so in the summer of 17, we had a little cocktail party.
And of course, she already had a lot of contacts in the music world down here.
That's what she said. She says, I know everybody.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes, she does.
Yeah. So we had a little cocktail party in Sarasota, and she thought no one would come. It was the middle of summer, but surprise, lots of people came.
Nice.
And I told them what I thought we could do, and they all got excited. And so we did one concert the first year, and then maybe one concert the second year. Then we started adding concerts, and then the pandemic came along. And then we actually ended up adding concerts on top of the, because we had an MPTF grant, so we did one free concert, and we did the other ones shorter programs, and so we got through the pandemic, and now this year we're doing five concerts.
Wow.
So it's like a tiger by the tail, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it has really grown. And, you know, you and I can sit here and we can toss around this word chamber music, chamber music, chamber music. Mm. And when I taught music appreciation, I always kind of had a specific definition to try to get someone who maybe wasn't a musician. What in the world is this chamber music? So what is your definition of chamber music?
What people most think of when they say chamber music is a string quartet or a violin sonata or maybe a piano quintet. A chamber orchestra, as I'm sure you know, means an orchestra which is, I would say, large enough that it needs a conductor, but small enough that it is most at home in a smaller hall with maybe a smaller audience. So there's more of a sense of intimacy. And it has its own particular repertoire.
Yeah, because I tell people all the time, you know, used to music was funded by the church or by the palace. Church or castles, that's who paid for music way back in the day. And these kings and queens and prince and princesses and dukes and duchesses, they would have dinner parties. And, you know, afterwards they go, let's go into this particular room, what they called a chamber. And it was big enough for musicians, but also for people to sit, maybe dance or whatever. And this term, you know, playing in someone's chambers, their bedroom chambers, is exactly what you might think. It has just stuck with us for hundreds of years, this word chamber. We understand it as musicians, but if you're from the outside world, it kind of is,
it
can blow
sense.
Your mind. It doesn't. It
doesn't
make sense. Any sense at all. Yeah.
Yeah. So with the chamber orchestra, we really run on the small end around 12 or 13 people. And the largest we've ever been is around 21, 22, up to about 26 to maybe 30 or so.
And mostly string players. You would add in some of the wind and percussion if the repertoire called for it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's partly a historical evolution because the little Baroque orchestras were almost all strings or with a few winds. And then early classical orchestras, well, so you got a couple oboes and a couple horns. And then by the time you get to Mozart, well, you got the winds in pairs. And mm-hmm. horns, and if it's a military-ish or full or sound, you got the trumpets and timpani.
Right.
And along comes Beethoven, here come those trombones and those
And just over time, the symphony orchestra, as we know it, has grown and grown and grown in length of their literature, in personnel, in size, in concert hall. But the chamber orchestra, as we know it, it's really, I mean, there's composers still writing for the chamber orchestra for certain, but it is really an historic ensemble.
Oh, I think you can find right up to the last minute, right up to now, composers who write for what they imagine to be a small ensemble. We played a premiere last year of a work by Michael Shelley, scored for just strings. We played it comfortably with 12 or 13 string players. You know, there's L'Histoire de Soldat, which is seven people. There's Le Bœuf sur le Toit, which is maybe 18 or 20. Schoenberg Chamber Symphony, et cetera. There's lots the pleasure for me is that, so sure, I've been conducting for what's coming up now in 50 years, but really until I got to this chamber orchestra, I conducted the full symphony orchestra repertoire.
50 to 60 players.
Yeah. And ballet and opera too. Mm. But so, you know, all the Beethoven symphonies, all the Brahms symphonies, all the Schumann symphonies, all the Strauss tone poems.
Yeah.
The great Stravinsky ballets, you know.
Well, let's talk about money, because a lot of this is budget driven. You know, if you're a composer and you want to get your music performed, you can't afford to hire a full symphony orchestra to play it, but maybe you can afford to pay 12 or 13 players to play your music. Sure. And I'm going to ask you from your end, because you start an orchestra from scratch. It's a professional group, and that, in my mind, means everybody gets paid. Yep. So you had to have some sort of funding to make this happen. So tell us about how not only has the orchestra grown in your offerings and your services, but also how did you start budget-wise, and how have you grown that?
Well, so orchestras, as all not-for-profit, to use that term, performing organizations, but it's the same for museums and for ballet companies, whatever.
Sure.
You've got earned and contributed income. So our earned income is ticket sales, advertising sales. We have a program book and people buy some advertising space. We don't have a gift shop, so I'm not selling mugs and t-shirts.
Right. Yet.
But yet. That's right. Yet. So that's the earned income. And it might be 40 to 50% of the budget. So where's the rest of the money come from? Okay. So we have an opportunity grant from the Arts and Cultural Alliance, and we have concert sponsors. So those are either individuals or in some cases businesses who like the program or the orchestra, or see it as a good place for them to invest.
And so, you have to go out and cultivate those things yourself?
Yes.
You have a team? Wow. Yeah. It's a big deal.
It is. Yeah. So we've had a lot of different concert sponsors over the years. This year, we have several individuals who are sponsors and a couple of businesses as well. And then the rest of it is individual contributions, which we get by fundraising emails. People can go online to buy our tickets, and there's a donation line there where they can add money if they want. There's a Facebook page. There's giving. There's all of the various ways that arts organizations raise money, because this is a hybrid funding model. It's not government supported, and that's it. It's a public-private partnership.
Sure. And you have been able, from its inception in 2017 till now, 2022, 2023 season, to grow all of those ticket sales, grants, and donation to make a viable season of five concerts.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. So
I think so too.
It is, truly.
I look at it and I go, wow, how
look what you've done. It's like you have this little baby and now it's almost a teenager.
Close. That's right.
In dog years. That's how I like to talk about it. Okay, so before we talk about this specific season coming up and your upcoming concert in December, tell us, how do you go about it? What is your time frame and your thought process on programming for the group? How do you pick the selections, the guest artists, things such as this?
Well, some of it's serendipity. For example, the piece we premiered last year by Michael Shelley. Well, I've known Michael for 30-some years. He's the composer in residence at Butler University. I premiered a piece of his a while back. And during the pandemic, he called me up and he said, I'm going to write five new pieces next year and give them away.
How generous.
All I expect is that if I offer it, you're going to play it.
Because that's really all composers want. I mean, they want to make money, but they want their music played.
Yeah. And he's a BMI composer, so he paid royalties, of course. So I said, great. And he said, what are your parameters? And I said, 15 minutes long, just strings. I know we can do that. And he came back and said, okay, it's just strings, but it's 18 minutes long.
Well, okay, yeah, close, okay. Enough. Close enough. Yeah.
Well, of course, when I said 15, I figured I have safety in the offer.
Right, right.
So that was serendipitous. We did another piece last year written by William Dawson Jr., who lives down in Fort Myers. A very good composer. Same thing. He was coming to concerts, friend of Laurie's, actually. And he said, I've got a song cycle I'd like to write. Would you like to do it? I said, yes. So that's kind of the serendipitous thing.
It's, and I would imagine a lot of just connections you've had over the last 50 years of musicians you've worked with or people that you've maybe heard in other concerts. Well, I'd like to do a program with this person.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're going to do a concert in March. So 2023 is the 75th anniversary of the founding of the State of Israel. It's also my 75th birthday. But so I just thought, you know, that would be a good idea. Why don't I do a concert with all Jewish composers? So then you follow your nose. So I thought, well, let's see. At the same time, I don't want to do a religious concert. I want to do a program that's of broad appeal. So, well, I picked the Bloch Concerto Grosso for strings and piano obbligato, partly also because I know Ann Stevenson Moe, and she's a lovely pianist, and I thought this would be a great piece to do with her. And then I thought, well, I got to have some box office names here because we got to have people see the concert. They want to, they got to see some names they know.
They do, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I picked one of those early Mendelssohn string symphonies.
Yeah, the Sinfonietas.
The Sinfonietas. And so we're doing number 10. I like that one very much. I think it's a good kind of overture. And then I thought Gershwin would be a good composer. There's a lovely lullaby by Gershwin, and get a little jazz element into it. And then I thought, well, you can't do a concert about celebrating Israel without having some Israeli composers. I know any Israeli composers? No, I don't. But there's that magic thing, you know, Google.
Oh, yes. I've heard of this.
Yes. So I Google, and first thing I know, I found the Israel Composers League, and I went there, and I started looking through, and I put on the search engine, I said, okay, the piece has to be under 10 minutes long, and it needs to be strings. I have a few winds, and the site has to have a PDF score so I can see it, and it's got to have
a recording.
A recording.
Yeah, so you can hear it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, well, that got me the list from hundreds and hundreds down to a manageable number. And I started listening to pieces, and I found a piece by Boris Levenberg called Hasidic Dance, and it's terrific. And I found a piece by Nubar Aslanian, which is a trumpet concertino.
Yes. And are these are contemporary pieces?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and actually, well, we're going to Israel next week.
And are you going to meet these composers?
I am.
How cool.
I've been corresponding with both of them, and excellent. I have family that live in Israel, so I don't have a language problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a translator there.
And perfect.
The trumpet concertino has not been played in the United States, so it'll be a U.S. premiere.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. And who do you have soloing on that with you?
Robert Smith, the principal trumpet of the Florida Orchestra.
Oh, that's not so bad, up in Tampa. And we have another connection there with Tampa, because I know here at the SCF Music Program, our cello majors, a lot of them transfer to USF because they want to study with the teacher there in Tampa, Scott Cluckstall. And I notice he is performing with you on your upcoming concert on December 1st, along with my friend, the harpist, Giuseppina Ciarla. So tell us about this concert coming up December 1st.
It's called Happy Holidays. For a lot of people, starting the holiday season off with music is kind of a tradition. It's how we started as an orchestra. So I thought this year, there seems to be an unending supply of Baroque concerto grossos or concerto grossi that are Christmas concertos. And of course there would be, because all those Baroque composers either worked at a court or a church, and so they had to write. And for you listeners out there, what makes something a Christmas concerto? One thing, it has to have a pastoral.
Yes, the pastoral, yes.
It has to be a pastoral. And usually the last movement, which would be unusual for a Baroque concerto grosso, because that makes the last movement slow when it should be fast.
Yeah.
So I found all these Baroque Christmas concertos that I didn't know. We're going to do the one that's the most famous this year, the Arcangelo Corelli. Yep. Christmas concert.
I've done it with the Pops. It's great.
It's a wonderful.
Wonderful really, piece.
Wonderful piece. Wonderful piece. So we're doing that. I heard Giuseppina play a year or so ago on a concert.
Isn't she just an amazing harpist?
Amazing.
And we are so lucky here. I mean, her and Ann Hobson Pilot and all these wonderful harpists are like here in our area. It's amazing.
So I went to Giuseppina and I said, hey, you want to play the chamber orchestra? Well, she said, I don't know. I'm very busy. And
Just wrote an album. And
And I said, but I was thinking of the five variants of Dives and Lazarus by Ralph Vaughan Williams. She said, okay.
I'll do that one just for you.
And then I thought, well, gosh, we got to have a harpist and only one piece. That seems like a waste. Mm-hmm. So I found a piece by a British composer named Granville Bantock called Hum Abdil. It's for cello and harp and strings. So that gave
me
an opportunity for Scott to have a solo. And
is he your principal cellist?
He's my principal cello. Yeah, I'm very, very honored that Scott makes the time in his busy, busy schedule for us. So this is a duet for cello, harp, and strings. And then I like to do holiday concerts, but not all Christmas. To have something that fits nicely in the season, but is just a wonderful piece. So this year we're going to do Grieg's Holberg Suite.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, wonderful. Mm. Just wonderful.
Just the color of the string sounds that he puts in there. Really nice. Yeah. Great choice.
And so that's on the program. And then I thought, well, we should have a couple of the seasonal pieces. So arrangement of Sleigh Ride for Strings and Christmas Wishes. And you probably sure you know that one too.
Yes.
And that can be played with just strings and piano.
Yeah.
So that's the program.
Very nice. Sounds wonderful. And it's going to be December 1st. And your orchestra kind of moves around for its performances? You perform in three different places?
We'll be playing the December and March concerts at First Presbyterian Church of Sarasota, the one that's on Oak Street, right near downtown. And this will be our first year there.
Okay.
Beautiful. Oh, what a beautiful.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
What a beautiful environment. It reminds me, except for the fact that it's a church, it reminds me of Symphony Hall in Boston.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I would agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're there for December and March. In February, we'll be at St. Boniface Episcopal Church in Siesta Key.
Okay.
We played there for the first time last year.
And what's the program for the February concert?
That program was called Virtuoso Night. And I'm very proud of the fact that a pianist named Joseph Kingma, who's at Palm Beach University.
Palm Beach Atlantic?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So Joseph has played with us twice before. We started a little project together. There are arrangements of Beethoven piano concertos for strings and piano.
Oh, wow.
They're 19th century arrangements. It's not like a contemporary guy.
Yeah.
It's a court composer named Vincenz Lochner. He was the music director of Mannheim, and he did these arrangements for piano and strings, and they're terrific, actually. Very in 19th century style, as great as they are. It's not like the Schoenberg arrangements of the Brahms piano quartet. You know, there's arrangements of the piano quartets by Schoenberg where there's like a bass clarinet and five piccolos and xylophone, you know.
So, bring in the Sousa band.
it just sounds like Schoenberg.
Yeah.
But this just sounds like Beethoven. We did two of them. We did the fourth and the fifth concerto. And then he went and submitted the recording of the fifth concerto to the American Prize and won third place.
Outstanding.
Yes. And so I thought, well, I've got to reward that.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to do another Beethoven concerto because it takes up the whole, you know, they're 40 minutes long. It takes up the whole program.
Yeah.
But I've always loved the F minor Bach concerto. Mm. I have a little, I'll come back to that in a minute. But I love that concerto. So I asked him if he wanted to do that. And he said, sure. So we're going to do that. Then a Mozart divertimento. And then two serenades. One by Carl Nielsen, The Little Suite.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific, terrific piece. And one by Leos Janacek. So those two suites, which are not too familiar to the audience. So you got Bach and Mozart. And then to pretty much early 20th century suites.
Great. And that'll be at St. Boniface. That's the February concert.
Yeah.
All right. And you have two more? You said you have five?
Yeah. You're a very sharp listener.
Well, you don't like to brag.
Keep me on track. Yeah. So in January, we will be playing in Venice.
Oh, good.
At the VPAC.
At the VPAC.
Yeah.
Now, that's not chamber orchestra size hall, but I guess you're going to make it work.
Well, I have a trick.
Okay.
So our principal bass player is Chris Riley.
Yes, and he is the orchestra teacher at Venice High School.
Sure. Yeah. And so I went to Christopher and I said, hey, how about let's do a side-by-side concert? So
brilliant.
Your orchestra and my orchestra, and we'll play some pieces alone and I'll conduct, and then you play a piece with your orchestra and you conduct, and then we'll put some pieces together and I'll conduct the two orchestras combined.
Because so he has to play bass.
He has to play bass. That's exactly right.
You don't want you playing bass.
No. Yeah. So we're going to do William Grant Still's Danzante de Panama.
Yeah. I love Still's music.
Yeah. That's a very wonderful piece.
Mm-hmm. All of his music's great. Mm.
And then we're going to do, there's an arrangement of Schindler's List, which is arranged for violin duet. So I thought this would be great.
Maybe your concert master and his concert master. Right. But we're on the same wavelength Bob.
Yeah. And then to start that section of the program, I met a young conductor. Oh, this is how long have we got here? Hours and hours?
Yeah. I get paid by the hour, my dad says.
All right. So when I was at the University of Hartford, I played in the Hartford Symphony, which was a pretty big orchestra. We played at Carnegie Hall every year. So my stand partner was a woman named Hanya Lechert. And Hanya at that time was the graduate assistant at University of Connecticut Storrs. And I was a graduate assistant. She was in violin. I was a grad assistant in theory at the University of Hartford. So there we were, stand partners, two grad assistants. And at the end of the third year that I played in the orchestra, I said, well, I'm going to go to Indiana University and study conducting. And she said, well, I'm leaving and I'm joining a small orchestra you might have heard of. I said, which one is that? She said, the New York Philharmonic.
Silly girl.
Yeah. So she played in the New York Philharmonic for, well, I think, 30 years. And she has a son. Her son is named Jan Siegel, and he was the assistant conductor of the Naples Philharmonic.
Well, looky here.
Yeah.
I see a plan coming together.
Well, it's more serendipity than that. You ask how we get pieces on programs.
Yeah.
So the Warsaw Philharmonic was on tour, and I knew that Hanya had recorded the two Szymanowski concertos with the Warsaw Phil. So we're still in touch. I emailed her and I said, I'm going to go hear the concert. It's a long time ago now, but is there anybody in the orchestra you know? And she wrote back and said, well, not anymore, but I know the conductor. He was the conductor of the Naples Phil. And so I went to the concert and I managed. Have you ever tried to get backstage at the Van Wezel?
Oh, actually, I have, yes.
Yeah, it's pretty tricky.
Yeah.
But I got backstage and I met him, and then he said, are you going to come to my last concert in Naples? Because he's retired from Naples. I said, oh, sure. So then I wrote Hanya back and told him I met him and that I was going to Naples. And she said, oh, my son will be there. You can meet him. And so I met Yanif, and I hit it off well, and he's a conductor. He just got the Salinas Symphony in Kansas, and he's a composer. So I told him what I was doing, and he said, I've got a piece. You want to do it? I said, sure. So
nice.
This is a piece he wrote for young orchestras. So.
Yeah, and again, all the way back to your days at Hart with your stand partner, and still through that connection, finding music to put on a concert for today.
You know?
It's pretty amazing. Okay, tell us about your last concert.
Just to recap. So we have our Happy Holidays in December. We're doing this concert in Venice in January, which is called Making Music Together. Virtuoso Night in February at Boniface. And then Celebration, the program of Jewish composers in March. And then we're going to repeat that concert.
Okay. So five concerts, four programs.
Right.
Okay.
And we're repeating it at actually Temple Beth Israel on Longboat Key.
Oh, that'll be perfect. Yeah. And you know that particular community will really love this performance and the theme of all of that. You know, it speaks to them. That's great.
Yeah.
Really good programming. Let me ask you this real quick. Say you have an opening in your orchestra or you need an additional player or two. Mm-hmm. Do you audition players to be in the orchestra, or is it just through you and Lori kind of knowing who's good and invitation style?
It's really invitation style.
Okay.
We're not that big. Mm-hmm. And we have a fairly stable
core group.
Core group.
Yeah.
So if a vacancy occurs, we ask around, think around. Mm-hmm. We try somebody, and then there might be one or two vacancies in the course of a year, maybe three. And so people that we really like working with, we just invite them to come back.
Nice. All right. And so how do people go about getting tickets to any of these performances?
So the Chamber Orchestra of Sarasota has a website, and you could go on the website now, and there's information about all the concerts.
Can they buy a season pass or just mm-hmm. one? Okay. What's the price range of your tickets?
Tickets are $35.
Okay. And you can sit anywhere, open seating, because they're at churches.
That's right.
We all saw them. Right. Yep.
So on the website, the bar at the top, there's a bunch of drop-down menus, and kind of over far to the right, there's a little button that says buy tickets, and you click on that. There's information right on the front page about each of the concerts. And there will shortly be program notes for every concert.
Nice. So, that's a lot to put together. Instead of preparing for lectures for academia, you now prepare your program notes for your concerts.
Correct.
I love it.
That's right.
I should do that. I just stand up there and talk. Nobody wants to hear me. Well, congratulations, Bob Vodnoy. You are now officially part of the club. If people want to follow your career or your orchestra, you said you have a website. Where would they find you? What is that website address?
It's chamberorchestrasarasota.org. So all one word and without the of. Chamberorchestrasarasota.org.
Good.
But if you just go in Google and you'll put find in it. Chamber Orchestra Sarasota,
yep.
Well, it'll give you us. It might also give you the Sarasota Orchestra and several
you
other
gotta
things.
You got to sift around a little bit, sure.
But it's pretty clear.
Yep. And we'll put a link also in our show notes. So people that are listening to this, if they're looking, they can just click right to it. Super simple. Don't even have to go to Google.
Right. So you when you go to the website, you just go to buy tickets, and then mm-hmm. there'll be a drop-down menu. Tickets are $35 for each concert. If you buy all three, mm-hmm. then they're $90. So there's a discount.
Discount. Or two for 180. That's a good deal. I'm just kidding.
Yes, you can do. When there's quantity, you can put a two in there. And there's also an opportunity to donate to the orchestra while you're doing that.
Excellent. Excellent.
Optional. And let me also say that I do a weekly newsletter.
And you can subscribe to that. It'll come in your email inbox.
Correct.
Awesome.
So if you happen to, I don't know, the easiest way to get the newsletter would probably be to go to
sign up on the website.
Go to the website, and then under contact, you'll get the orchestra's email address. Just send me a note that says, I want your newsletter, and give me your
And you get it.
Yeah, and then I'll add you to the list. And it comes out on Tuesday mornings.
Excellent. Well, it is amazing to me how, quote, chamber music and the concept of chamber music has been passed down through the centuries. You don't talk to a musician alive that wouldn't rather play in a small, tight chamber ensemble over a huge symphony orchestra. They just love it because it's so musically rewarding for the player and for the audience. I hope your programming and audience reach continues to expand. It's been amazing what you've been able to do here. And I want to thank you for joining me today, Bob. Best of luck to you and your group.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Robin.
Thanks for listening to the Suncoast Culture Club podcast. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram at Suncoast Culture Club. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. That helps a lot. But most importantly, head over to our website, suncoastcultureclub.com. While there, you can send us a message requesting we cover a certain person, organization, or event. And then you can choose the Support tab to make a donation to the State College of Florida Foundation to help support the SCF Arts Education students and programs. You can also choose the Join the Club tab to make a donation directly to the podcast. And don't forget to check out our calendar of events page through the website to see all the arts happenings in Sarasota and Bradenton. Thank you for joining our club. Stay well. This has been Robin Bell.